This is Football in Europe Transfer Talk.
Hello and welcome to Transfer Talk. We're looking at the major deals that happened at the back end of the summer transfer window. We've had a couple of days to digest them now. I'm joined by European football journalist Kevin Hatchard. Kevin, thanks for coming on.
No problem, mate.
Okay, as you're familiar with all matters Bundesliga, let's start with Wolfsburg, a big transfer window for them, notably because Kevin De Bruyne left for Manchester City and Julian Draxler has gone into the club, a surprise move for many from Schalke.
Well, within the De Bruyne situation, we always said that the impetus was going to have to at least partially come from the player, and it did. He saw the money that was on offer from Manchester City. He realised that a move back to the Premier League would be an exciting switch. And Wolfsburg, having actually been, you know, quite hardline about it to start with, slowly but surely weakened as the window went on and the figures went up and up and up. And there is a sense that the sporting director, Klaus Allofs, played a bit of a blinder, really, by teasing a bit more money out of City. He's a terrific player. I think he will make an impact at Manchester City. I'm fascinated to see how he fits in with their system, because I think he's been very successful at Wolfsburg as kind of playing in a number 10 role and moving out wide. Well, that's kind of what David Silva does. So how will Manuel Pellegrini, the coach, be able to integrate him into what he's already got? As for the move for Draxler, well, it kind of made sense. They needed someone who could play a similar role. Draxler's slightly different, but I think it could be a good move for all parties that Schalke get a decent amount of money. Draxler gets a move that could re-energise him after what's been a tough few months, and Wolfsburg gets somebody who potentially is a very good player.
And does Draxler play in that 10 position like De Bruyne did, or does Max Kruse, another new signing for Wolfsburg in the summer, keep that position?
I think Kruse will play that role because it will be a fluid system anyway, because Dieter Hecking, the coach, likes his players to interchange, likes them to switch positions and what have you. I think Kruse will play a bit more centrally, and you'll find Draxler maybe coming in off the left. Andre Schürrle, of course, part of that attacking setup as well. And they've got to find a way to compensate for the loss of Ivan Perisic as well, because a lot of fuss been made of De Bruyne going, which is absolutely right. He is the creative heartbeat of that Wolfsburg team. But Perisic, very important to them as well in terms of goals and assists. And I think he'll take some replacing as well now that he's gone to Inter.
And Kev, Dante leaving Bayern for Wolfsburg for just €4 million. I know he's got a mistake in him, but that looks like good business to me. What are your thoughts?
It's an interesting one. My concern about it from a Wolfsburg point of view is, what does it mean for Robin Knocker? Because they've got a very good young player there who, for my money, was improving week by week by playing. And he lost his place to Tim Klose. And now he looks even more cast adrift from that first team picture because Dante has come in. Dante's very experienced. He's a physical defender. He's strong in the air. I do worry about him against pace, and I think, as you quite rightly said, he is capable of making mistakes in high-profile games. So whether it will work with him alongside Naldo, we'll have to see. It's a small transfer fee. Obviously, with the wages, it'll be quite a big financial package, and it's a risk in the sense that what will happen to a good young player like Robin Knocker?
Of course, the end of the window for Manchester United was dominated by the fact that David De Gea didn't go to Real Madrid. The two clubs clearly not happy with each other in the way that, that transfer was going through. And United also spending all that money on Anthony Martial. I actually can't believe the amount of money they've spent, Kev. They're saying this transfer could be worth up to €80 million. I've seen him a few times. He's a player with great promise. But this just seems like a great risk for United. And it seemed to be a messy end to the window.
It was. And it's a huge amount of money, as you quite rightly say, for a teenager. He's only 19. He's a raw talent. He's incredibly quick. You can see how promising he is, but by his own admission, he hasn't played a lot of first-team football. There were rumours that Wayne Rooney hadn't even heard of him and had to ask Morgan Schneiderlin who he was. And Martial was asked about that in the press conference and said, well, that makes sense. That's normal because I haven't played a lot in Liga and I haven't played at all for the national team. So it's a stab in the dark in that sense, because we don't know how he'll respond to playing regular first-team football at the top level. But United have obviously scouted him quite a lot. You know, this wouldn't be, I know people think that, you know, people suddenly go through a directory of names on deadline day and that's how it works and they stick a pin in it, but he will have been on their radar, he'll have been on their list, and they'll have moved beyond the targets that they initially wanted down to him. It's a huge, eye-watering amount of money. Monaco, of course, are doing this now. This is their new project. They initially wanted to compete with Paris Saint-Germain at the top of Ligue 1, but they now realise financially they can't do that. So they get players, they improve them, and then they move them on. And this is a massive success for them. Whether it's a big success for United, well, only time will tell.
Follow us on Twitter at FIE Show for the latest from football in Europe.
Okay, let's look at some of the other deals now. Hernanez has moved from Inter to Juve for €11 million. Bear in mind that Inter spent €20 million on him just over 18 months ago. Alessandro Matri has joined Lazio on loan from AC Milan. Branadei goes to Olympiacos after a disappointing spell at West Brom. Porto have signed Jesus Corona, the Mexico international. I just wonder if he's Champions League level. I saw him in the Gold Cup in the United States over the summer. I just wonder if he'll come up a little bit short in the Champions League. Going out of Porto after his arrival, Adrian, he's gone back to Spain, unsettled in Portugal previously. He's gone on loan to Villarreal. Błaszczykowski, going back to the Bundesliga, has left Dortmund for Fiorentina on loan, and Dortmund Kev have signed Adnan Januzaj on loan from Manchester United. But in a team who's seen its playmakers, the likes of Mkhitaryan and Royce and Kagawa, revitalised under Thomas Tuchel, where does Januzaj fit in that team?
Well, that is the big question, Rob, because has he swapped one bench for another? Because at the moment, Thomas Tuchel's men are flying, and you've got Mkhitaryan, you've got Royce, you've got Kagawa playing as well as he's played for Dortmund. And it's tough to see Januzaj breaking into that. And there's a sense amongst Dortmund fans, I think, that this isn't necessarily a deal that needed to be done, because they've got Jonas Hoffmann as well, who's made a good start to the season, had a strong loan spell at Mainz last season, and really has only been curtailed by injury problems. So Błaszczykowski leaving, I think, was a bit of a gut-wrencher for Dortmund fans, because he's such a popular player, but he's had so many injury problems in the past couple of seasons, so it did make sense for him to move on. Januzaj, the kind of player that Thomas Tuchel can work with and can improve. I think he'll do lots of work with him tactically on the training ground. He'll try and integrate him into his tactical flexibility into the system. Januzaj, we know, is a talented player. We've seen it, but he has to do it on a consistent basis. That's what Louis van Gaal has alluded to in recent press conferences. And I think this could be a move that could work out really well if he can seize the opportunity. But as you said right at the top there, Rob, how is he going to force his way beyond Mkhitaryan, beyond Royce, beyond Kagawa? It's going to be a really tall order for him.
Okay, let's look at some of the other deals. Obi Olari, the striker for Watford, signed from Club Brugge. I saw lots of him in Belgium last season. On his day, he is unstoppable. A big physical presence, scores headed goals, good first touch. When he's bad, he's really bad and clumsy. And I just wonder whether this is a bad move for him, because with that big Watford squad, I don't think he's going to be playing regularly. I think he just needs regular football. So Obi Olari signed by Watford. Lots of promise, but a big question mark there. Roma have signed William Van Kier from Dinamo Moscow, the French midfield player. He's strong, likes to lay it off. I don't think he's the standard required for Roma, though, to be honest. Inter have also added a robust midfielder in Felipe Melo. Expect them to pick up a few more cards this season. Dimitar Berbatov has signed for PAOK. He was linked to the move to the Premier League, but he heads to Greece instead. And another interesting one with the Bundesliga, Kev. Javier Hernandez joining Leverkusen from Manchester United. How's that move been viewed in Germany? Because I know you like their striker, Stefan Kiesling, a lot.
Yeah, I think in general, the German media have been quite positive about it, because he's seen as a top quality player and a big name as well, because in an immediate time where the Bundesliga has lost some of its bigger names, especially to the Premier League, I think it's seen as one back really for the German top flight. How he's going to fit in remains a big mystery, because as you said, Stefan Kiesling He is the top man and has been for season after season after season. He saw off Josip Drmić last season, and Kiesling is very important to the way they play, I think, because he's a focal point, a reference point in attack, and he gives guys like Çalhanoğlu, Brandt, Memedi, Bellarabi space to work. So if you replace him with Hernandez, is it going to work in the same way? Maybe there's a tactical shift that Roger Schmidt, the coach, wants to make. Or maybe even they'll try 4-4-2. Now, they tried that last season with Josip Drmić and Stefan Kiesling, and it didn't work. It was an utter disaster. So it gives them a bit more flexibility. It gives them more options. But Hernandez has got a fight on his hands to dislodge Kiesling if it's going to be a straight fight for that one striker's role.
Well, apparently the Spanish media have almost been laughing at the amount of money that we've been spending in England in the summer transfer window. Really good business for Athletic Bilbao as they brought in Raul Garcia from Atletico at the end of the transfer window. Chelsea, meanwhile, have signed Papi Gilabogi, the Senegalese international centre-back who was playing at Nantes last season. Kev, I was looking through some notes from a game that I covered of Nantes last season in which Gilabogi did play. And I had no notes by his name. I normally write something after the match, my thoughts on how a player did. Not to say he was bad, but he didn't do anything outstanding. And the French media certainly seemed confused by Chelsea signing him. Is there any chance that they have acquired a centre-back for League Cup football to face lower league opposition, to play in perhaps the under-21 side, even though he's 27, playing the reserve team in essence, and also provide a robust challenge for the forwards in training?
It is entirely possible, Rob, because they might feel that they need, with the bearing in mind they didn't necessarily get who they wanted and they didn't want those defensive reinforcements that they had targeted, they now need to preserve the guys at the top of the defensive roster, if you like. So therefore, they are going to need other guys to play in the League Cup. It was interesting that they were heavily linked with the move for Marquinhos towards the end of the window. Paris Saint-Germain quite rightly said no thanks because he is a very important player. I thought Paris Saint-Germain looked much better defensively when he was part of the lineup last season. So they had a firm no to that one. And I think the Chelsea situation is interesting. There's clearly a lot of discontent there, certainly in the short term, with the way they've started the Premier League season. And with their recruitment, there's a lot of controversy at the moment about the fact they've got so many young players out on loan across Europe, because some Chelsea fans are saying, well, why aren't you giving some of these youngsters a go? Why aren't you trying to bring them through instead of buying ready-made players for big money? So I don't think it was a total wipeout for Chelsea. I think Abdul Rahman Baba was a great signing, the left-back. He's got huge potential and I think could make a real run at one of those full-back spots for Chelsea. So, yeah, it's a suck-it-and-see one for them because the John Stones thing took most of the headlines and you wonder if they wasted a huge amount of time on pursuing him where they could have been looking at other targets.
OK, Kev, I think we've gone through most of the good deals. I'm sure there's a few that slipped through the net there at the back end of the transfer window. But who's had a good window for you?
I think Manchester United are an interesting one because they actually started the window exceptionally well. And Matteo Darmian, I think, was a great signing at right back. I think Bastian Schweinsteiger and Morgan Schneiderlin have strengthened their midfield. And Memphis, as we know, is an explosive player in attack. And the De Gea and Martial moves, or non-moves in De Gea's case, made it look like a messy end to the window. But I think on reflection, their transfer dealings haven't actually been that bad. I think Borussia Dortmund, for example, have had a great window, not necessarily because of the players they brought in, but because of the players they kept. Marco Reus is still there. Mats Hummels is still there. Ilkay Gundogan is still there. So they've done well. Staying with Germany, you look at Bayern Munich. They've brought in Douglas Costa, who already has been a sensational signing. He's had a real pace, real unpredictability out wide for them. Arturo Vidal as well has really strengthened that midfield area. You look at Juventus, though, and you wonder, you know, how well have they done? They've allowed some established players from that Champions League final team to go. Carlos Tevez moved on. Andrea Pirlo moved on. So have they done the right thing in letting some of those players go? Paul Pogba staying in Turin is obviously a massive plus for them. And Paulo Dybala coming in, I think, will be a huge plus for them as well going forward. So an interesting window for them. So certainly with the way they've started the season, no points from the first couple of games, there are one or two murmurings of discontent around Turin.
Okay, so that's most of the major transfers from the final few days of the summer transfer window. Kev, thanks for coming on.
Cheers, mate.
You've been listening to Football in Europe. Join us every week on Audio Boom for the latest content, interviews and special features. For more, follow at FAE Show on Twitter or head to footballineurope.co.uk.